An incident in my life where I was led more deeply into God's truth. And that was in the issue of whether or not I, as a lawyer, as an ordinary mortal man, human, would be engaged in the process of divorce. Do you remember that part of that weekend where I was asking God to speak into my life on this issue, to draw me more deeply into God's truth, was that when, therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. And coming to the conclusion before God that on the basis of that, I, as a lawyer, would not be engaged in the process of divorce. In other words, separating what God had joined together. I had the file on my chair the very next morning. So here is a situation where we might learn a principle that when we are more deeply drawn into God's truth, we are going to be immediately challenged on our commitment to what we've just been drawn into. I took the file. I tried to trade it. I acted in a way which I would submit, given my youth, was reasonable. I was trying to determine whether there was a way in which I could remain faithful to what God had revealed to me over that weekend by simply trading the file with somebody else, and I would be off the hook. I would no longer be involved in that process. And it didn't work. So I left you with me having gone back to my office, file still in hand, 10 o'clock appointment with the court where I would have to apply for a divorce order for this lady who was the client of the firm I worked for. I sat down. What would you do? If you were in my boots, what would you have done? You want to turn up the volume or something? I don't think they heard me.
Call the lady.
Call the lady, okay.
Pray.
Say?
Pray.
But he, as you remember, is Mr. D. So Mr. D is not the least bit sympathetic. He's the guy writing the book about me entitled The Decline and Fall of the Moral Article Student. No sympathy. I knew the answer before I asked. But perhaps I could have done that and explained it again. And probably got, I would suggest, a no answer. Go back and do it. Well, there's an issue, isn't it? Where's the level of my commitment? If I was forced to do that, would I be in a position where I would resign because of that and not do it?
Pray.
There was something over here. Pray. Who said that? Yeah. Well, all three of these things entered my mind, but not quite in the same order. I think there was, sorry, what's your first name?
Jacqueline.
I think the Sunday, actually, before I came into the office, that thought had crossed my mind. What would happen if I was forced to do something contrary to what I had just heard from God? And I had determined it in my mind, but of course, there's a difference between playing it through in your mind, hypothetically, and actually meeting the event in reality. And I think hypothetically, I said, if it comes down to it, I will resign. The very next morning, of course, I'm faced with the reality, and I don't think that occurred to me. I would just, it evaporated. I was in the moment, if you will. The first thing I did as I sat down, I said, Lord, what do I do? And I think that's prayer. Lord, what do I do? And this is, I think, where when we're talking about Titus and about living in culture, a culture which would have wanted me to compromise on this very thing God had spoken or revealed to me that very weekend, that we stopped there at a piece of information, a piece of knowledge, a little nugget of information from God's Word. And when it comes time to actually begin to move more deeply into the experience of God's life, we back off. And when we back off, we lose the nugget as well. We lose everything. We go back. The second, the other suggestion was phone the lady. And as I was praying, that's the thought that came to my mind, phone the client. And I didn't have a clue, really, what am I going to say to this lady? You know, am I going to tell her that I'm not going to do it? Or am I going to, I didn't know what to do. So as I picked up the phone and I phoned her, we'll call her Mrs. X. She had a nicer name than that, but Mrs. X. And she answered the phone right away. And I introduced myself. I said, I told her my name. I told her the law firm I was with. And I told her the reason I was phoning her was that her file had been given to me that very morning for the purpose of taking it to the court. And I was directed to get her order divorcing her from her husband. I said, it's a relatively straightforward procedure. And she said, do I need to attend? And I said, no, you really don't need to attend. And all the time, I'm sort of praying and looking for God to offer up a way, because I want to be faithful to what he taught me on the weekend. I knew somehow in my heart that I was not going to go through with this. But how was I going to move more deeply into the experience of God's life, which is the actual putting the rubber on the road? As I was talking to her, I did say at one point, I said, Mrs. X, do you have any other concerns or questions? And she said, no, not really. Oh, yes, there is one. Who's the judge? And I said, well, he's Judge, and I do remember his name very clearly, but I'll call him Judge Y. And I said, well, why would you ask? I said, I don't know the name of the judge because you can't shop for judges. You just have to take the judge that happens to be in the courtroom. Why do you ask? And she says, well, our neighbor and very good friend is a judge. His name is Judge Y. And I just really wouldn't want this done by Judge Y. I said, fine. And all of a sudden, a little light bulb started to go off in my head. I said, So I phoned the court registry. Now, the court registry will not tell you who the judge is unless there's a real good reason, because they don't want you picking and choosing between judges to get one that you think is more favorable to your plight, cause, rather. And so I explained to the clerk that answered the phone who I was, my file, why I was phoning, and would it be possible to find out who the judge is, because he might have to recuse himself, he might have to back off if it's this particular judge. And she said, which judge is it that you have the concern with? She was going to let me fish. And I said, it's Judge Y. She said, Judge Y is the judge on that docket. So I went quickly over to the courthouse. I met with the judge in his chambers, and I explained the situation to him. And I said, Judge, I'm just doing this as a courtesy to you, giving you a heads up. What would you do in this situation? And he said, well, of course, they're good friends of mine. I would not hear it. Let's adjourn it. How long would you like it adjourned? And I said, a month. And he said, a month it is, and we'll put it up in Vernon. So it went to another city even. For some reason, I never got that file back. But I can tell you, on the way back from the courthouse to my office, I don't think my feet touched the pavement the whole way. You see, there's an element where being drawn, if I can, again, just keep hammering these two nails, being drawn more deeply into the truth of God will have to result in you having to be drawn more deeply into the life of God. And that's the way we move forward in this process of becoming more like Jesus. Now, I don't want to leave you with the idea that all of my experiences were positive. I could tell you some that I failed in, some of the gray areas that we heard about in that Mike referred to, times when I knew what I was supposed to do, but I didn't do it. And that resulted in me having to confess that to the Lord and set it straight and get on with life. And there's one particular big blooper in my life that I recall. And for obvious reasons, I just don't want to tell you. But I think we all have that. And I think what I'm trying to do is point out to you, how do you make progress? How do you become more like Jesus if we're just looking at the text here of Titus? Are you starting to get the idea? So as we move into Titus chapter 2, I think that what we're going to be looking at, trying to emphasize, is how do we learn to combine in a healthy way these two elements, these two railway tracks of moving more deeply into God's truth and more deeply into God's life. And the way I'm looking at Titus is by chapters. Now, the chapter divisions are not always a good indicator. There was a man named, I think his name was Cardinal Hugo, who was responsible for dividing up the chapters in the Bible in about 1250 AD. I think the Psalms would be accepted. They would have already been broken up, as they are pretty much. But apparently he did it when he was going from city to city in a bumpy carriage on a rough road. So some people have suggested that the division of the chapters is somewhat bumpy as well. But I think in Titus it works. Titus chapter 1, I very generally encapsulate that whole chapter as Christ against culture. Christ against culture. We've got these Christ's servant leaders who are standing as the bulwark. They're standing as the models for what it is to live Christ. And they are there, one of the reasons they're there is to oppose, to rebuke those who are the opponents, so who are representing culture. So you've got Christ against culture for chapter 1. I'm going to suggest for chapter 2 we've got Christ in culture. How are we to live as followers of Jesus within the context of culture? I am not suggesting, as we know some do, is to escape culture, leave it alone, go out into the desert and live completely separate from any other piece of humanity on the globe. So chapter 2, Christ in culture. And then when we come to chapter 3, we'll see starting tomorrow afternoon, Christ to culture. How do we reach into culture and perhaps see some transformation taking place, not only in the culture, but more particularly in the lives of other people? Just as we were reached, we reach others. So let's move in here to, what page is it on the notes? Anybody got that?
46.
Page 46, thank you. And you'll see the title there is Living Christianly in Culture. And I've divided it up by way of the chapter. I've got the general statement, which is verse 1. And then he addresses older men. And we'll talk about what older is there. And that's verses... Did somebody snicker? Okay, you did. Okay. So older men are dealt with in verse 2. And then we've got older and younger women in verses 3, 4, and 5. And actually, strangely enough, the bulk, I've been challenged when I've spoken on this before. A woman came up to me and says, why did you spend so much time on talking to women? And I said, because the text gives more space to it. So I was a bit snarky because she was a bit snarky, and I think I had to confess that as well. But anyway, younger men are dealt with in verse 6 and perhaps 7 and 8 because Titus is involved there. And then slaves in verse 9 and 10. And if we go to verses 11 to the end of the chapter, which we'll deal with, Lord willing, tomorrow morning, I'm going to submit to you is, you know, we're going to be left with the question, I hear what he says we're supposed to be doing, but how can I be equipped or empowered to do it? And I believe that's what it's talking about tomorrow, starting in verse 11, talking about the effect, the equipage, the empowerment of the grace of God in our lives. So let's go down and read chapter 2, verses 1 to 10, and then go back and start to unpack it again. Chapter 2, verse 1. Paul to Titus, you must teach what is in accord with sound doctrine. Teach the older men to be temperate, worthy of respect, self-controlled and sound in faith, in love, and in endurance. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way that they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure,